God's grace and mercy that I'm here this morning. And I'd like to tell y'all it took me 23 years and two treatment centers to get here. And I usually like saying that, simple fact that it keeps me reminded. You know, I look at it like a baseball game. You know, three strikes you out. And I'm not really trying to get off plate. You know, I'm trying to stay at bat. You know, things have been going real good so far. And I'd like to thank the committee and Narcotics Anonymous for asking me to come down here. I'm nervous. I have my alarm clock set up for 7 o'clock to wake me up, and I got up at 6:30. And I've been walking around all morning nervous, you know, because this is an honor and a privilege to be here. And my hands are really sweating. Y'all see me wiping on my pants, you know. You know, when they Sam asked me to do a workshop, he gave me several topics to do. And he gave me a few with a lot of fancy names to them. So my sponsor always tell me to keep it simple. So I say I'll do the first step. You know, because I like the idea of one addict helping another addict. And the first step to me is the most important step of all the steps, because if you don't get one, you know, the other 11 really don't mean anything, you know. And like I said, it took me 23 years and two treatment centers to get here. And when I went to the first one, you know, I was in total denial. You know, and I thought drink was my problem. You know, and so when I went into treatment, they sent me into an alcoholic unit. You know, and I'm totally denial because I'm the youngest one there, and I'm in there with a bunch of war veterans. You know, and I couldn't comprehend what was going on. You know, and just to satisfy my family, which kind of pressured me in going, I stayed for the duration of the 28 days plus the 90 days in aftercare. But all the time that I was there, my mind was back here in D.C., back in D.C. And just as soon as they released me, you know, I came back to D.C. And I thought I would start my life all over again, and didn't want to mess with them people on the corner anymore. Give me a good job and get my material things back, and I'm okay, you know. And I went to one meeting, and I was insulted at that meeting because they told me if I don't follow their suggestions, I will use again. And so what I did, I was going through something, and I raised my hand in the meeting and had to share. And it was at this club, and somebody told me, sit down and shut up. You know, you don't talk to me like that. You know, I'm an ex-Marine. You know, I'm from the bricks of D.C., and, you know, you can't just talk to me like that. I'll show you. So I left, you know, and 14 months later, I ended up picking up. And in them 14 months, you know, they were real miserable. And even though that I thought I was doing the right things by working, paying my bills, something was missing, and you know, and I didn't realize what it was, you know. And by me being so good and doing what I was supposed to do, pay my bills and all that, and also being lonely, I thought I'd reward myself on my birthday. You know, and what I'm trying to tell y'all, I was without sex for a long time. So I thought I'd go proposition a suffering sister. You know, and when I did that, everything seemed like it was going okay. Hotels, and she got what she want, and I'm waiting to get what I want. And we got to the hotel. She was taking too long, you know, and I had to kind of like speed up the process, you know, and I was watching her, and I realized she wasn't doing it right, you know, and because I wanted to tell her to come on, man, I'm ready to go. So I had to show her how to do it, you know, and first thing you know, I'm sitting at the edge of the bed with my head between my legs saying, what did I just do? You know, the girl is gone. The money is gone. I didn't get no sex, you know, and I'm feeling real bad, you know. But the mind told me, well, nobody has to know. You know, and from that time on, the disease of addiction dictated every move I was supposed to make. Even had me thinking that I can hide it from y'all. You know, talking about powerless over this addiction, man. You know, I tried many ways to avoid going into that vicious cycle. I think that's a perfect way of putting it, that vicious cycle. You know, because simple fact is that I was trying to control what the disease was desperately trying to make me do. You know, but when I end up in the grips of it and had no control anymore, you know, I said, so what? Well, what the hell? Might as well go for it. And I went hard, you know. I went so hard that I end up losing everything that I had gained within them 14 months in a matter of a month, you know. I started giving the dope boy my car. It started off 54 hours to a dime a week. Then it got to the point, man, just drop off something and come back whenever you feel like it. You know. Then when I definitely realized that I was in the grips and couldn't get out, you know, that's when depression, I don't know, I never knew that I was in depression in my addiction, but I was. You know, the whole world was against me. You know, nothing's going to happen for me, you know, so what's the use? So every day that I got up, I worked on getting that next hit. That was my mission, to get the next hit, you know, until I came to a point in my life where I ended up hurting someone that was very dear to me, and I realized that I did. And I was in what you call a blackout rage, you know. And what put me there, they came and interrupt my using. And when they did that, I went off. And in the process of going off, I put my grandmother in emotional shock. And when I did that, not realizing what I did at that moment, I came back to resume my using. And when I walked down the steps of the basement of our house, where her house, it was like Mike Tyson hit me with a right cross. And I realized what I did. And for that moment is when I asked my God, at that time, I asked God to take my life. Because I realized I bit the hand that had been feeding me all my life. You know, it was time, at that time, I really wanted to stop using, but I couldn't. I dialed the 1-800 number that comes on TV, and they put me on hold. It was too long. I had places, my place was a place that they used, and I put signs on my door, do not disturb. And I hear this, and the committee says free, and I end up letting them in. you know. Many ways I tried stopping using on my own, and it didn't work. And I realized in the 14 months before I picked up that I ran my own program and willpower was my sponsor, and both of them let me down. You know. And I realized that the grips of this disease had a hold on me so tight that only the act of providence can release it. You know, I tried many ways, you know. But see, it's strange about this disease of addiction, because what I told you, it dictated every move I was supposed to make. Even when I make a decision that I want to stop and it seemed like the clarity is about to set in, you know, I realized that I didn't totally surrender and the disease snatched me again. It had me thinking that I have a good idea that I can get out of this. And it wasn't about getting no help, it was about getting my life back on track on my own. Get another job, you know, geographic change, you know, don't deal with y'all people anymore, you know, and I'd be okay, you know. But I didn't realize that the disease has another idea too, you know. It made me seem like that everything was going groovy, and it set me up again. Had my ego all pumped up, thinking I'm okay again, you know, and I feed right into it, you know. So it got to a point that I was really tired of using. It got to a point that I was really tired of living the way I was living. I got tired of having to work so hard just to get that next fix. And that was a lot of work, you know. So when I went into this program, SUMS, you know, they said, well, we'll accept you, but you have to do something for us. You have to manage, you have to stay clean 5 days. And that was the hardest job that I ever had in my life, y'all. And I managed to only stay clean 4. And when I used that 5th day, you know, I felt that guilt. And I was in that despair again, and I realized that, what's the use? But was something inside of me said, why don't you go and tell them people that you used? And that's what I did. And when I told them I ended up using, they gave me a hug and said, that's all right, try it again. And from that moment, the obsession to use was lifted. You know. And I confessed and I surrendered. You know, I was determined to do whatever was necessary to stay away from a drink or a drug. You know, and when they put me into treatment, you know, they did some first step work. And for me, I had to do my first step backwards. I had to do my unmanageability so I could recognize my powerlessness. And that's what worked for me. Because I thought I had the power. You know, I just thought just because I had a little bad luck, I was messing around in the wrong neighborhood, I need a better job, I need a position, you know. I had a lot of those things, my money wasn't right, all that. You know, I had to get that straight, but I thought I still had some power. But see, I didn't realize that every time I used, I got in trouble. And every time I got in trouble, it's because I used. I didn't realize that every time I got up, I had to rely on some kind of mood altering chemical to get me started. It was a crutch for me. You know, I could not stop even if I wanted to. I didn't realize that until I came in the rooms. And when I came back this time and I went to a meeting, they said, go to the meeting 90 days. You know, I doubled that. They said, get a sponsor. I got in my sponsor hip pocket. And he'll tell you, I called him so much, you know, it got to the point that he'd call me before I called him because he'd know I'm about to call him. You know? Seems like we pick up the phone at the same time. You know, I feel you, man. I feel you. You know? And I really love my sponsor today. You know, I got to the point that the work that I do today, voluntarily, is giving it back to another addict. You know, because like I said, the first step to me is the most important step in all the steps. You know, I can't recognize anything else until I recognize that I have a problem with drugs and alcohol. I cannot do anything about the other steps until I actually surrender to the disease of addiction. And it's not just because of the drugs. It was my actions and my behavior I have to unpile this over. You know, the thought of using sometimes hits me. You know, they come up with this new stuff, and I wonder how would I handle that. You know? I used to ask my mother when I first came around, why did I keep thinking about using? Well, how long did you use? You were an addict. You go think about using. You know? But I don't have to use. That's the bottom line. Even when I want to, I don't have to use. You know, and today I don't want to use. You know, it's not about the material things I gain because it's not that much I have. But what I have gained, you know, is my self-worth, the love of my family, which is really important, y'all, to me. Because when I had it hard when I first came in, I was looking so much approval from my family. You know, because simple fact, I destroyed the confidence that they had in me because of my using. Because I have stole from them, I lied from them. You know, this disease carried me areas that I didn't want to go. You know, and it carried me areas that I was thinking about wanting to go. You know, but I never left the block that I lived in. You know, trying to stop using out there wasn't real easy for me. You know, I want to thank Narcotics Anonymous, and I want to thank my sponsor, and I want to thank my higher power for allowing me to be alive today to share my experience, trip, and hope. Thank you.
Thanks, Butch. This time I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Lynette.
Thank you, Chris. Family, good morning. I'm an addict. My name is Lynette. Amen. And it's because of God's grace and His mercy that I stand here before you this morning, clean and sober, and today without a desire to use drugs or alcohol. I am eternally grateful for the committee and for the individual that nominated me to speak, to share what I consider the greatest possession that I have, which is my story. I'm honored to speak on step one in tradition one. Step one is how I got here. Step one is my story. Step one is something that I must keep up front and personal in my life on a daily basis. If I don't know what my story is, then there's a possibility that I might do a sequel or repeat, or do an addition to it. It's important to me that I remember the devastating situation in which I was delivered to you all 46 months ago today. And I know that I'm a miracle. It's important that I remember I'm a miracle. I see people on a daily basis that I pray for, my sister being one of them, that will never taste the blessing of a day of recovery. I'm not talking about a month to pick up a 30-day chip or 30-day key ring. I'm not talking about a year's anniversary with speakers. I'm talking about a day, one day without drugs or alcohol. I'm talking about one day without selling my soul to the devil, without my consent. I'm talking about the freedom from active addiction. I'm eternally grateful because that's the gift that you all gave me. It wasn't anything that I could purchase. It wasn't anything that I could obtain by myself. That's one of the blessings about this gift that God has given me. It's not something that I could give myself. It's not something that I could go to a particular individual because I like them or I like the way you look. God is so awesome that he has not allowed me to select the flowers that are in this garden that I walk in on a daily basis. I had no control in the people that are in my life, the people that give me help each day. If he had allowed me to pick it, I probably would have fucked it up. You know, my picker is broke. I don't know how to pick good things. I don't know how to allow goodness in my life. I don't know how to be at ease with good things happening to me. I don't know how to be at ease with people saying good things about me. I can tell you that I love you unconditionally, that I accept you just the way you are, that there isn't anything about you that I would change. But on a daily basis, I look at myself, and there are things that I always want to change about me. I have no problem accepting you for who you are, but I'm unappreciative of the work that God has done in Lynette. And I always want to tell him what needs to be different about me. It's called a dis-ease, not just a disease. It's a dis-ease with myself that I still suffer from 46 months later. My issues have not gone anywhere. The issues that caused me to use drugs and alcohol for almost 25 years of my life. Abandonment issues. Grandiosity, judgmentalism, low self-esteem, so many things. But you know what? The goodness of God and his grace and mercy is sufficient for me today. Anything that I did not get right yesterday, if I don't pick up, he's given me 24 hours that I've never seen before. I can get some of the people that I talked about yesterday. If I tell you about myself, I stand a chance today not to talk as much about people as I did yesterday. I may not lie and judge you even though I don't know you. I don't know where my help is going to come from. I may not get in a clique that's talking about you and I don't even know what the hell the situation's about. But one more time, because I want to people please, I'm going to start talking about you too, because there's somebody in that group that I like and I want to be with them, you know. Three Dog Night used to have this song that said, one is the loneliest number that you'll ever know, you know. And Butch said so much, you know, I think about my story. I think about the great job that God blessed me with. I was a court stenographer. I traveled all around the world. I went with the Democratic and the presidential administration. I worked on Capitol Hill for 14 years as an expert transcriber. And you know, the bottom line is it didn't make a difference how high or how low I was. I had me with me. I went on Braniff, American Airlines, United, First Class, and hung with all of those people you see on the network news that were doing what I was doing. They had the same baggage and the same issues that I have, you know, same things that I suffer from, they suffer from too, you know, but it wasn't until I came here with a willingness. We were asked to speak on step one, I was told, but tradition one also. And tradition one and step one talks about one thing that is so prominent, and that's the self-sufficiency of an addict. You know, because of what I've gone through, I think I got it. Because what I've gone through, I'm convinced that I can do this thing by myself, that I don't need anybody. And I don't know how long ago Three Dog Night made that song, but I've been hearing that song. Lynette, one is so lonely. You cannot recover by yourself, sweetie. You can't stay sober by yourself. Grace has a twin. It's called mercy. You know, it's grace and mercy that I'm here. It's not anything that I did. It's not anything that I did. I need to remember that. And I need to remember that I'm not exempt. That I don't have this thing, that I need every single individual in this room, whether I like you, whether you're in my network or not, if you're in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, we need one another. The hand of Narcotics Anonymous that extended itself to me, I always remember that. Butch was talking about the unmanageability, and that's how I had to do it too, Butch. I remember one day I went to get some contact lenses. One day when I decided I was going to spend $10 of my check on myself as opposed to giving all of it to the crack boys, I went to the optician, and he pulled out my cards. And instead of pulling out one card, he had six cards on me, you know. He said, "Dad, a year ago you lived in Landover. 8 months ago you was in Southeast. 6 months ago you lived in River Terrace in Northeast. 4 months ago you lived in Arthur Capers. Last month you was in Clay Terrace. You do a lot of moving around, don't you, Lynette?" I couldn't understand that. I couldn't understand that. But at that time, my motto was, "Have drug, will travel." Okay? Because, see, on the first of the month, I come bearing fruits. I come bearing gifts. I got a check to work with. I need you in my presence. I suffer from people pleaserism. I don't like getting high by myself. I like setting up the table. When I was on the hill, we got paid once a month. We had a big fat check, but it was always gone the next day. I make that list. I'm going to pay last month, this month, and maybe next month's rent. I'm going to pay all three of them boys that I owe out there that I can't go out the front or the back door unless I run into them. I'm going to send that $7 around to school so my child won't be the only one that doesn't go to the zoo this month. I'm going to buy some groceries to go with that light bulb firming that's in the refrigerator. Ain't nothing in my refrigerator when I use but a light bulb, y'all. Except some dirty dishes. I store my dirty dishes in the refrigerator because I ain't doing no cleaning when I'm on it. You know? And then I make that list. And Butch said, a knock comes at the door, and everything on that list go out the window. I ain't going to do none of it. And this is the kicker. Yeah, this is the kicker. 99% of that time, that knock was somebody that said they loved me. I don't remember nobody knocking on my door. I don't know. 99% of the time, it was somebody that said he was my God sister. They said it was my sister. It was my man. It was somebody trying to turn me on, you know, or somebody trying to help me stay another day in that death style. They weren't talking about that saying y'all tell me, "Sweetie, you don't even have to use the day even if you want to." Well, damn, that means I don't have to go up in Safeway today and steal. I ain't got to go in CVS, you mean? I don't have to lay with somebody and I don't even know his name. He told me he was going to give me 20, and when I got up, it was 7. You mean I ain't got to do that today? Oh, no. They didn't tell me nothing like that. You all had to tell me something like that. It was those simple things that you all told me that helped me come back, because when I got here, I had been stripped. I had been stripped. The God that I serve doesn't want me to place anything before him. He didn't want me to place that Alfa Romeo before him, that condominium, congressman, whoever you are. He doesn't want me to place you before him. So in order to get my attention, what he had to do was remove stuff out of my life, because I have a tendency to think that stuff in a man validate who I am as a woman. Don't do me good shit. You become my big book, you know? So what he had to do was slowly and with my assistance, rule the Alfa Romeo out, because, you know, that car note got to be a little too high. Those Italian people that fix Alfa Romeos like a little bit of money, so that was too expensive. We had to let the car die. Sit over there on the road. I don't need to put no gas in it. The condominium, you know what happened. I got evicted. When they were setting my shit out on the street, my thing was I need that black bag because it had my tools in it. And I'm not talking about the 12 and 12 or the big book, you know. The only thing I'm going to need today is that bag over there, because I happened to get a child support check the same day they evicted me. The last thing on my mind was about saving my home and having a place for me and my boys to live. All I was thinking about is that I got $150 from the District of Columbia. I'm on. I'm on. It was gone the same day. It was gone the same day. The powerlessness, the insanity, you know. But I was a willing participant. Nobody ever put a gun to my head any of those days. I showed up, faithful soldier, Lynette, reporting for duty. What do I need to do today? What do I need to do today? Today I'm showing up for life, y'all. I'm showing up for life. I'm just so glad that God saw fit to come into the middle of hell. I said, Lynette, you got to do something. So you know what? I would walk around all the time and say that God is omnipotent and he's omniscient and he's omnipresent and he's all of these things. That if he didn't want me to be standing here with this damn antenna and this piece of newspaper with some grain alcohol on it, then he'd knock this stuff out of my hand. He said, Lynette, you got to have your hand in this. You got to do something. Stop waiting on everybody to do something for you. What are you willing to do for your damn self today? You know, in recovery. In recovery. You go to the group with a mess is your mess. In the first tradition, it talks about common unity of a group. That's what kept me coming back, a group. You all told me to get with a group of people that possessed something that I wanted. And I found it, and it's a step group, my home group. The people that I talked about in the beginning that accept me just the way I am. Just the way I am. My good points and my bad points. The days that I don't use, I stand a chance. The sky is the limit. I can do anything. Any day, I got some people, I call them a backup band. Y'all call them a network. I got a backup band. They got a mean bass. Oh, we got a couple of tenors and altos in there, you know, but we sing. You know, we talk about not getting high today. You know, we talk about unconditional love today. We talk about encouraging one another and helping one another go through something. You know what? When I talk about that one thing, me being by myself, it don't make a difference how good the hit was. Any issue that I had before I took that hit, I got it when I'm done. Then I got some more because, see, I stopped going to work when I use. I don't pay the bills. My son's knocking on the bathroom door trying to get in there, and I'm trying to tell him, hold it, you know, for 20 more minutes, you know. When I use, it's all about me. It's all about me. I forget people that I love. I steal from people that I love. I hurt people that I love. You know, some people that have not forgiven me, others that have. Others that the only way that I'm here today is because they forgave me for stealing their tithes out of their Bible. They forgave me for spending the rent money, even though I said that that's what I was going to. People that gave me the courage to run this race and to let me know that when I say that you are a beautiful human being, that I mean it. But there is work to be done, you know. There is work to be done, you know. I've just begun. But the bottom line is I got to come here. I can't get this in church. I went to church a whole lot of Sundays. Went up to the altar so many times, and I wanted them to lay hands on me, and I wanted to quote the 23rd Psalm. I wanted to get on my knees. I wanted to usher in. I wanted to do works for God, but I was dirty. And I was dirty, and I knew that God wasn't going to do for me, not in the condition I was coming in there. I have a sister back in D.C. that says that scripture that says, in my house there are many mansions. I have prepared a room just for you. This is the kind of room he prepared for me, y'all. He sent me to you all. He sent me to you all, people that let me know every single day for all of the issues that you suffer from. those that you recognize and even those that you don't recognize. There's somebody that's sitting to the right or to the left of you, or the front or to the back of you, that's gone through it, that's been there, that's done that. And if you have the courage enough to tell them about it, they'll help you get through it too without picking up. We got 30 minutes, and it's more than enough time to open the meeting up, but I want to say this before I close, that Butch mentioned having to come here twice. And I say that this for the person that sits here and you're convinced that you don't have a problem. The last year that I was on Capitol Hill, my boss came to me and he told me, Lynette, I don't know what's going on with you, sweetie, but something's going wrong with you. He said, we have a round trip ticket, and it's to the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia. There's a treatment facility up there. Take this ticket and do what you have to do, sweetie, but go get yourself together, you know. And when I left Washington and went to National Airport that day, I was convinced I did not have a problem. So what I did was I took those people's ticket, went to the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, ate for 28 days, slept for 28 days, did not hear shit because I was convinced that I did not have a problem. You know, they had all these horses and trips to the streams and all this shit, and all I was thinking about was that I should have one paycheck and a child support check waiting for me when I get back to D.C. I didn't hear anything because I was convinced that I did not have a problem. Butch talked about taking 14 months. Hell, before I left Virginia, I had called my man and told him what time to meet me, because it's going to be on. I did not hear anything. And the reason that I did not hear anything was because I was convinced that I did not have a problem. My aunt and them had a problem. If they would just leave me to shit alone. When those two roads come together called opportunity and time, when I get myself back together, you know, I'm going to be all right, but I don't have a problem. And what I say that to say is I did not learn anything. I went away for 28 days. I didn't recover. You know, I did not recover because I did not consider myself having a problem. But I heard one thing while I was in Virginia, and I always love this because this is what sustained me. It talks about a woman that was sitting in the middle of a field, sitting by a hole. And she was crying, and a young man came past her and asked why she was crying. And she said, I have one son, and he's in the bottom of that hole. And the young man said, stay here, and I'll go get you some help. And he went over to the hospital, and he got a renowned surgeon. They came back, and he said, this gentleman is a surgeon. He will help your son come out of that hole. And the surgeon stood over and repeated the Hippocratic Oath and some more stuff. And he said, now, young man, come on out of that hole. Your mother's waiting for you. And they waited a few minutes, and nothing happened. The young man said, hold on, I got somebody else. He went down to First Union Bank, talked to the president of the bank and told him the situation. And the president said, I got more than enough money. Money will help this situation. The president packed $1 million in one suitcase and $1 million in another suitcase. They went back to the park and stood over the hole, and the president poured all of that money down in the hole. He said, young man, you've got more money than you'll ever need in life. Come on up out of that hole. Your mother wants you. They waited. Nothing happened. Amen. Said, hold on. I'm going over here to the Church of High Rolling Reverend Dr. Deacon Dr. You-Know-Who. Brother Man got a sermon for you. You know? Brother Man came back and stood over the hole, and he talked about Daniel being in the lion's den. He talked about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and all the miracles of God. He said, you're a miracle too. Your mother's waiting for you. Now come on up out of that hole. They stood there and waited and nothing happened. 2-3 minutes later, here comes one of us. He's got a Michael Jordan hat on backwards. He's got 2 diamonds in his ear. He's got one of those legs rolled up and one rolled down. He's one of us, though. He asked him what was going on, all these people standing there by the hole. The woman told him that my son's down in the middle of that hole. The young man said, hold on. Hold on, hold my book. He's got an N.A. big book, y'all. He said, hold my book. What he did was he backed up a couple of steps and he ran and he jumped down in that hole. And the mother stood over the hole and she said, "Fool, what's going on? Didn't you see us? Did you hear not anything that we said?" And all he simply said is, "Ma'am, I'm an addict just like your son. I've been there, but I'm the only one here that knows the way out. For me, it took an addict just like me to come to detox, to come to Caracol, to come to Samaritan Inn, to tell me, 'Lynette, sweetie, I've been where you've been. I know the way out.' I'm eternally grateful, y'all. Thank you, Ocean City. Thank you, D.C. Love y'all."
I'd like to thank our speakers. Before we open the meeting up to those who'd like to share, please remember to come up to the microphone one at a time. Also, try to keep in mind that there are other addicts who are waiting to share. If you don't want to be recorded, please inform the person taping so they can turn off the recorder while you are sharing. Anybody like to come up and share?